Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Hi, everybody. Last Friday, when we unveiled our price of birth control pills map, at least two things happened. You could see the disparities from pharmacy to pharmacy in the tri-state area that the map includes. And many of you wrote or called to say, wait, I thought contraception was supposed to be free now under Obamacare. So we'll begin today with a closer look at your women's health benefits under Obamacare, birth control, mammograms, and more. We'll do this with Sarah Cliff, who is a practically full-time Obamacare blogger for the Washington Post Wonk blog. She specializes in health care. We'll also check in with her about other aspects of the law as they gradually take effect, like how many employers are laying off full-time workers so they don't have to cover them, and how the Republicans are gearing up to use Obamacare as an issue in the midterm elections already. Hi, Sarah. Thanks for doing this. Welcome back to WNYC.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So let's begin with birth control pills and other contraception. We remember the whole controversy with the Catholic Church and other employers who have religious objections to contraception, wanting exclusions, and Rush Limbaugh calling that Georgetown law student a slut for speaking up for coverage, and et cetera. So remind us how that all wound up.
Right. It's been a kind of crazy and very long debate over this provision in the healthcare law that guarantees that health insurance plans will cover contraceptives without a copay. Where we ended up is essentially with nearly all employers required to provide contraceptives without any sort of copayment for the person who's filling the prescription. And there are some small exceptions. Churches, for example, are not required to abide by this. But the large companies that were in contention, such as Catholic-run hospitals and Catholic universities, those are going to be required to provide contraceptives, but they got a one-year safe harbor. So their requirement doesn't kick in until this summer. But for anyone working for a company that does not have any religious affiliations, it should be working out right now that your employer is covering contraceptives as a benefit without charge.
Right now.
Right now.
So what should women do if they've been paying a deductible or a copay for their contraception? How do they start to take advantage of the law?
Sure. So I guess I should add one more kind of fine point is that there are some plans under the healthcare law that are considered grandfathered. These are plans that existed prior to when the healthcare law passed in 2010 and haven't been changed since then. And as long as an employer doesn't make any significant change to the benefits, they're allowed to run that plan as it existed prior to the Affordable Care Act. So there is the possibility that some women are in grandfathered plans where this rule doesn't apply. It's certainly, I mean, folks can definitely check with their employer and ask them about it. It's definitely been in the news. I know the National Women's Law Center does field some of these questions about whether benefits are supposed to be covered and what women can do if they're not being covered.
Right. In fact, coincidentally, I retweeted a release from the Women's Health Law Center last night that actually gives women a script with language that you can use to talk to your insurance company to find out if they're complying with the law and then to push them if not. So listeners, you can just check out my Twitter feed at Brian Lehrer, and you'll see that just a few tweets down from the top as I sent it out last night. And remember, folks, the price of birth control pills map that we produced with clearhealthcosts.com is up at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. And also our price of mammograms crowdsourcing project is now underway. We're asking anyone who has gotten a routine mammogram this year to enter some simple pricing data on a form we have on our site. Check that out at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show and add your numbers if you can. We've gotten more than 150 entries so far, and the more we get, the better this reporting will be. So please look at our form at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show if you've had a routine mammogram in the last year. Sarah Cliff, what about mammograms and other women's health services besides birth control, which is the one that got all the press attention? What else is included in Obamacare with no cost sharing?
Sure. Sure. Yeah, there's actually a set of 8 benefits that are included in that provision. And as you mentioned, contraceptives have obviously gotten the most attention. One of the ones that has gotten a little more attention are supplies for breastfeeding. So breast pumps are supposed to be covered without any sort of copayment. And also a consultant to help with breastfeeding is another service that is supposed to be covered. And that's another one where I wrote a story about that part of the law and have heard from some women since who have had trouble getting that covered with their health insurance company. So it does sound like there, as well alongside the contraceptives, that there is some confusion as health insurance plans add this new benefit about what exactly is supposed to be covered.
Listeners, if you want to call in for Sarah Cliff, who blogs about healthcare for the Washington Post on their Wonk blog, give us a call if you have questions about women's health and Obamacare, or really anything about the implementation of Obamacare, because we're going to broaden this now. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or you can post your question to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehr Show. Let's look at some other news-making aspects of Obamacare as it heads toward full implementation. First, it's moving back into the political spotlight. Republicans are hoping to feast on problems implementing the complex system to campaign on in next year's midterm elections. And, I mean, anything that big and complex will undoubtedly have some rollout problems. And Republicans hope to use whatever bumps in the road show up to call the law a mess and win more congressional seats. Are there certain problems that they are most salivating over, anticipating that they will actually happen, Sarah?
It's a little difficult to tell at this point, given that we're still a few months out from the really big provisions taking place. But the ones that seem to get the most focus right now are concerns about employers moving employees to part-time in order to dodge the healthcare law's requirement that all workers with over 30 hours a week receive health benefits. So that's one that has come up a fair amount. I think what you're going to see going forward is, you know, a lot of scrutiny of these new health exchanges, which are supposed to be these marketplaces where folks can sign on like an Expedia for health insurance and essentially compare plans and pick an option. And I think you're going to see, you know, both from Republicans and Democrats, a lot of scrutiny of how well are those working? Does the federal government have the technology to set those up? So I think those will be two issues that will come up a lot going forward.
Tell me more about this 30-hour work week, because most companies that have full-time workers above 30 hours a week, the company will either have to provide health insurance or pay a fine to the federal government, which goes to help cover the uninsured. They call that play or pay, give health insurance or pay the fee, as you know. So it's a big question. How many Americans will lose full-time jobs so employers conduct the health insurance law? And I know you looked into this a little bit for one of your recent posts. Is it already happening in a way that can be measured, or are certain industries seen as the most likely to drop full-time workers?
Yeah, you know, it's a little difficult to tell how much this is happening. We don't have, you know, some great way to track every employer. What we have now is, you know, small, limited cases where companies are saying, I'm moving some workers to part-time because of the health care law. But it's always difficult to parse if, you know, there are other factors at play, kind of why that decision is being made. There was a survey that the Federal Reserve Bank in Minneapolis did about a month ago where they found that 4% of the businesses in their area had moved workers to part-time because of the health care law. So that's one way to gauge it. I would say, though, you know, it seems like a pretty straightforward and easy decision for employers on the face that they can just, you know, not provide health insurance and dodge this fine by moving folks to lower hours. But when I've talked to, you know, consultants who work with a lot of these large companies, they'll say it's not so simple that, you know, one of the things, if you're a specialty retail store, for example, there might be a lot of value in having someone who works a full-time job and is really, you know, comfortable with all the products you sell and able to interact with consumers. And there'd actually be a lot of work in terms of administration to kind of ensure that each worker wasn't getting over the 30-hour threshold. So you're, you know, creating more work for your HR department. So it's not really a straightforward decision for employers, and there's a lot of factors they're weighing and, you know, whether this is the right thing for them to do.
And does this play or pay law apply to government and nonprofit employers as well as businesses?
It does, yeah. So this applies to anyone who is in a business with, yes, anyone who is employing folks, this will apply to them. So one of the areas where you actually see this coming up a little bit are school districts. If you might see school districts moving more of their workers to part-time in order to avoid paying for benefits.
That's pretty ironic. The government institutes universal health insurance, and it's government agencies that are looking for ways to skirt it.
Yes. I don't know if it's exactly what the administration intended, but then again, you know, I think they're weighing a lot of the same, you know, trade-offs that other big businesses are weighing, that, you know, a teacher might be a lot more effective if she's working more hours. And I would keep in mind, you know, if you want to scale back some of your workers to, let's say, 25 hours a week, you're going to have to hire more people and train them to kind of fill in the gap that mm-hmm. they're leaving behind. So it's not like those hours magically get filled in some way. So there are costs associated with moving folks part-time.
All right. We have a lot of people calling in with questions about Obamacare and women's health and Obamacare and other benefits as it gradually takes effect. My guest, Sarah Cliff, who writes about health care for The Washington Post's Wonk blog, 212-433-WNYC. Nina in Piscataway. You're on WNYC. Hi, Nina.
Hi. Good morning, Brian. I wanted to find out, you know, Obamacare, nothing has been mentioned about coverage for dental care. Is there any kind of provision for, you know, preventive care for dentistry or any kind of mandate for employers to offer dental care to their, you know, workers?
Yeah, great question. The forgotten land of coverage, which I think fewer and fewer employer plans cover, and dental care can be so expensive if you need anything beyond just the basic, you know, cleaning and checkup and maybe a filling or two. Is dental care included in Obamacare at all, Sarah?
So it actually divides by adults and children, which is kind of one of the weirder things of this law. Dental care is actually a really interesting example, where the health care law requires all health insurance plans to cover this set of essential health benefits, which are essentially what the government considers the really core aspects of health insurance. So these are things like hospital visits and preventive care and trips to the doctor. For adults, dental care is not considered an essential health benefit, so it is not required that insurance companies cover it. For children, however, it is required. It is considered a essential health benefit, so it actually depends on whether or not you're over or under 18. So it's kind of a odd benefit and, you know, a good one to kind of bring up.
Good answer. I didn't know about that. Linda in Huntington, you're on WNYC. Hi, Linda.
Hi. Good morning, Brian. I have a question about pap smears. Are, you know, routine pap smears covered under the new health care law at no cost? Because the reason why I ask is my, you know, I go every year and my gynecologist does not accept insurance. But now, is she going to charge me, or, you know, I have an insurance plan. Will that be considered, you know, a benefit under the new law?
Do you know, Sarah Cliff?
So a few things I would add here. If your doctor isn't accepting insurance, then she probably will charge you for the pap smear or any other procedure. How the healthcare law works is it's not a requirement that doctors provide services for free, but rather that the insurance plan cover all of the costs that the doctors are charging, that they don't have you cover 10% or a $10 copay.
So since Linda says she's insured, she could submit her bill to her health insurance and presumably get 100% reimbursement?
You know, I wouldn't want to speak to a very specific situation. There could be some issues with network if this doctor is considered in network or not. But it's certainly, you know, an issue worth pursuing. And it seems plausible that, you know, under the Affordable Care Act, which both has a set of women's benefits and also a separate set of preventive benefits for everyone that are supposed to be covered without copay, that's something that they might cover now.
And I guess it could also get into reasonable and customary charges for your geographical area and whether the doctor charges above that range, whether you get 100% back from your insurance company. But it sounds, for Linda and anybody else, like something that they should push on pap smears and these other covered areas of women's preventive health that are supposed to be fully covered with no copay now for women who are insured under Obamacare. What about women who aren't insured?
Right. It's definitely a different situation there where, you know, not much has changed. If you don't have insurance, you're still going to be paying for these products out of pocket. The big changes for women who aren't insured are going to come in October, when they can start enrolling for health insurance with federal tax subsidies on these new exchanges. Mm-hmm. So right now, there hasn't been a lot of change if you don't have health insurance.
Patty in Lincroft, you're on WNYC. Hi, Patty.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
All right.
I had a question. I work at a community college, and our human resources department is telling us that lobbyists for adjunct faculty across the nation are advocating that preparation time should be included. So, for example, if you teach a three-hour class, it's really 6 hours because you have 3 hours of preparation. So our HR department is telling us that we have to cut our adjuncts, the number of sections our adjuncts can teach, to keep them under 20 hours a week. They're saying that the law states 20 hours a week, not 30 hours a week. And I was just wanting to get some clarification on that.
Right. I think that's, you know, one of the issues, and I should have mentioned earlier, colleges and adjunct professors are another area where this part-time, full-time distinction has become quite relevant, where you do see other colleges across the country looking at restricting adjuncts' hours. And I think, you know, whether it really creates kind of a new importance on what counts as work hours or not in a way that employers haven't had to think about previously. You know, before you were, you know, maybe paying for a few more hours, but there wasn't this bright line between who receives health insurance and who doesn't. And now you're going to see employers thinking a lot more about how many hours their employees are working. And, you know, I'd imagine situations like this one are not going to be uncommon, you know, elsewhere in the country.
Couple of others coming in. I'm not going to have time to put the callers themselves on the air. Somebody wants to know if breast pumps are covered with no cost sharing as preventive women's health, also prenatal care once somebody's pregnant.
Yes. The short answer is yes. Breast pumps are one of those benefits. And it was actually, I wrote a bit of a more fun story in January about how breast pump companies are actually experiencing a boom in business right now because of this healthcare provision and, you know, seeing increased demand from women for products that, you know, typically are very expensive and haven't always been covered by health insurance companies. I also have, since I wrote that story, heard from some women who've had trouble getting their breast pump covered, that, you know, some of the insurance plans don't seem to be updating their policies and they're getting a bill for it. So that's one thing to certainly keep in mind. And again, I'd say, you know, the National Women's Law Center is fielding some of those concerns about benefits getting covered.
And on prenatal care?
And on prenatal care as well. Yes, that's also considered a covered benefit.
All right. So just to finish up on some of the politics, this thing that Max Baucus said the other day, of course, Max Baucus, the famously kind of centrist Democrat who recently announced he's not going to run for reelection, and that was just after enraging a lot of other Democrats in the Senate by not voting for the gun background checks bill. He said this about Obamacare.
I just see a huge train wreck coming down, and you and I have discussed this many times, and I don't see any results yet.
He said that to the Health and Human Services Secretary, Kathleen Sebelius, doesn't see results. This huge train wreck coming down the rails as opposed, because of the implementation vagaries of Obamacare. And then look who kind of backed him up on this, Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid. Listen.
Max said, unless we implement this properly, it's going to be a train wreck. And I agree with him.
Whoa. What exactly was Harry Reid saying there?
So I do think the word train wreck, you know, might not be one that Max Baucus is especially, in retrospect, happy with choosing. But essentially the idea that they're conveying there is that, you know, right now there's not a whole lot known about what exactly is happening inside Health and Human Services to set up the law. And I think there's significant worry among Democrats about, you know, how much is being done. The federal government has ended up with a much, much bigger task than anyone thought when this law passed. You have, you know, more than half the states have decided not to build their own health insurance exchanges, and that essentially leaves Health and Human Services with the responsibility of building over 25 state-specific insurance markets. At the same time, you know, there was very little funding for this in the law because they thought all the states would do this themselves. So HHS is in, you know, this very challenging situation of doing more work with less money. And I think, you know, you see concern from senators and advocates, you know, about what the rollout of this law is going to look like.
Well, a lot more conversation to be had, obviously, as this all takes place. I think a lot more conversations with Sarah Cliff, because she knows so much, if she's willing to keep coming on. And she writes for the Washington Post's Wonk blog, specifically about healthcare. So this was very, very informative. Thank you very much for doing this with us. I think a lot of people got a lot out of this on particularly women's healthcare provisions of Obamacare and what's in effect and what's coming next. So thank you very much, Sarah.
Yes, thank you for having me.
And listeners, remember, once again, the price of birth control pills map that we produced with clearhealthcosts.com is up at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Though now you know that if you're insured, you should be approaching your insurance company to get that 100% coverage. And our Price of Mammograms crowdsourcing project is now underway. We're asking anyone who has gotten a routine mammogram this year to enter some simple pricing data on a form we have on our site. Check that out at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show and add your numbers if you can. We've gotten more than 150 entries so far, and the more we get, the better this reporting will be. So please look at our form at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show if you've had a routine mammogram in the past year or so. All right. Now, coming up next, how the sequester is affecting scientific research in New York and New Jersey, and we'll take your calls on however you see the effects of sequester cuts in your lives or businesses. 212-433-WNYC.